Hello. As the theme for my sermon today is all about seeing, or blindness as the case may be, I have to say it saddens me that due to the current circumstances requiring us to keep away from one another, I can't actually see you to deliver it in person. However, we have to make the best of things, so I hope that reading or listening to it will be better than not having a sermon at all. I'm new to this recording lark, so I hope you'll bear with me. Here we go. Father, be with me in my speaking and in all our hearts as we try to discern your message. The Lord does not see as mortals see. This was the standout phrase for me from the passage in Samuel chapter 16, and I think it prompts a few questions. What do we see? What do we not see? What do we miss or misunderstand or misinterpret in any given situation? If we really think hard about this, perhaps the answers to these questions say more about our values than our possibly restricted vision. What do we regard as important? What really matters to us and why? In the first reading, as Samuel regards Jesse's sons, he sees big, impressive young men from a good family, any one of whom could potentially be a successor to King Saul. They all look like they could become kings one day, but they're not the ones God chooses. Up to this point, Samuel doesn't know about the youngest son, David, and probably Jesse didn't think to include him in the lineup. It doesn't seem to occur to either man that the son who is only a boy at the time could be the one. Surely he's too young, too small, too inexperienced in life in general to be the one. Who can blame Samuel for his mistake? When looking for a successor for a very important role, we're hardly likely to start looking among the children, are we? But we do not see as God sees. In the story from John's Gospel, we hear about a different kind of blindness, or different kinds of blindness. First of all, the literal blindness from birth of the man who is physiologically unable to see. And we hear a discussion about why that is. Was it someone's fault? Did he or his parents in some way sin and cause the blindness? Nowadays, we're unlikely to regard such a disability as a sort of punishment for sin. But we may wonder whether we did or failed to do something that may have caused or contributed to it. It's good to hear Jesus firmly state that it wasn't anyone's fault. Then we see another kind of blindness, willful blindness or being blinkered. The Pharisees are unwilling to see the miracle of the man's sight being restored as a miracle, because it doesn't fit in with their very precise and prescribed belief system, and it offends against the code of conduct to which they cling and enforce so strictly. To them, abiding by the rules is far more important than the amazing miracle of the blind man receiving his sight. They cannot countenance the idea that someone who they, the elite as they regard themselves, have not seen or accepted as a prophet, let alone the Messiah, could perform such an act. Who is he, this Jesus? A one-time craftsman from a labouring class family, from a disreputable town. How could someone like him be a prophet or the Messiah? Unthinkable. We do not see as God sees. Much as we often see the Pharisees in a bad light, I suppose we can't blame them entirely for their scepticism. Having dedicated their lives to religious study and adhering strictly to the Jewish laws, it would be hard for them to even consider that God would not choose one of their kind as his Messiah. Apart from their blindness, there's none so blind as them that will not see, what the story shows is their hardness of heart and their meanness of spirit. Yes, strictly speaking, the rules about healing on the Sabbath were flouted, But why would anyone not rejoice at the miracle that had given someone their sight, and all the liberation that went with it? A miracle that God chose to bring about through Jesus. Please don't misunderstand me. I appreciate the need for rules and rituals, and we shouldn't lightly disregard them. But rules and rituals are there to serve people, not the other way round. When we lose sight of that, and when the wrong things become all important, then we really have lost our vision and our way. I would venture to suggest that this happens far too often in our own times, not just in the past. And we need to keep our eyes open and at least try to see as God sees and be willing to see his gifts in unlikely places. I suppose what we really need to consider is what kind of God do we believe in and worship? A small-minded, mean-spirited one? Or one full of love, mercy, and compassion for his children? Given our current circumstances, as the global pandemic really takes hold, and our very real worries about how we will cope in the present and what the future will hold with us, it would be remiss of me not to reflect on it here. As I said a few moments ago, it seems, at least to me, that all too often we lose sight of what is really important, and we waste too much of our energy and concern on things that aren't. Too many people have their heads down focusing on the work, eat, try to sleep, repeat cycle, just to hold everything together, that they don't have the time to examine whether this is a good way to live. Others feel excluded because they don't have the means to join in with what they think everyone else is enjoying. Others still were isolated before the pandemic even started, by loneliness or caring responsibilities, in which they are just left to cope, largely unsupported. For whatever reason, far too many people live their lives in a state of stress and distress because things are out of kilter and we have lost our vision of what is actually important and worth striving and sacrificing for. Perhaps the words of the hamster in the film The Secret Life of Pets 2 should make us think. I run and I run and I run and I run, and I get absolutely nowhere. No one wanted the awful situation we are in, but given that we've got it, perhaps we could use the enforced changes to reconsider and re-evaluate what we are doing as individuals, as nations, and internationally. If you are in enforced isolation, instead of getting even more stressed, use the time to catch up on much needed rest. Connect meaningfully with those who are special to you by whatever means you can. Take time to think about what you're doing with your life and consider whether it's what you really want. Maybe you don't have much choice, but at least you'll have considered it, and it may help you to make plans for the more distant future. Even those poor souls who will be working harder than ever to keep things going may be prompted to think about their way ahead and what they want to do when the crisis is past. I am not blind to the fact that for some people there will be terrible losses of life or livelihood and much more before this pandemic is behind us. I pray that they will be helped and supported, and that we will help and support each other. If we are wise, we will use this time to make changes for the better that will benefit all of us and our world. In other words, actively look for a silver lining to the clouds and bring some good out of a bad situation. One final thing before I finish, which takes us back to our story from John's Gospel. Today, as you are no doubt aware, is Mothering Sunday, and sadly we're without our usual flowers and chocolates and get-togethers. I know the readings don't make reference to mothers, but I didn't want to leave them out entirely on their special day. I couldn't help thinking, I bet Jesus' mum would have been incredibly proud of her son's actions that day, and rightly so. Let's all try to see as God sees and act accordingly.